So we are going to continue today from where we left off 2 weeks ago. Last week, in honor of the Lag BaOmer, we deviated from our previous discussion. So we were discussing Svara, and specifically the role of Svara. And we're going to begin by discussing the scope of Svara. To what degree may we use Svara in order to determine halacha? And then we'll return to a question that some of the chaver brought up during the previous year or at the end of year about how that applies in the modern world and dealing with issues of morality and Torah and the like. So we'll, Be'ezras Hashem, get towards that, get address those issues in the second part of this year. Today. In terms of the Makoros, please refer back to the Makoros again that we gave out 2 weeks ago. So last time we talked mostly about the ability of Svara in order to, at least in the second half of the previous year, to shape the interpretation of the text of the Torah, how we use Svara in order to know how to read and understand the Psukim. I'd like to begin today by talking about the role of Svara to shape mitzvos and determine the parameters of the mitzvah. And let's just give some examples, I think, of what's a very common phenomenon, whereby the psukim in describing a particular mitzvah do so narrowly, and we, using Svara, expand the mitzvah tremendously. So we'll give a couple of straightforward examples. Let's take the case of Talmud Torah. So what does the Torah teach us? V'shinantam levanecha, which is very narrow in scope. Teach your children. But as the Rambam points out in Sefer HaMitzvos, this is the makor for the general mitzvah to study Torah. So we see here the Torah formulating the mitzvah very narrowly. But using Svara, we understand that this should be understood much more broadly. Another example that the Rambam would say might be the mitzvah of tshuva. According to the Rambam, there's no mitzvah of tshuva. There's only a mitzvah of vidui. But from the mitzvah of vidui, we derive that you must do tshuva. There's effectively a mitzvah of tshuva. Right, if you look at the Koteret to Hilchos Tshuva, he writes that mitzvah sase achas v'hi sheyashiv hachote mecheto lifnei Hashem v'yisvadeh. Now, there's no pasuk that says to do tshuva. So how could there be a mitzvah to do tshuva? Answer clearly is from the mitzvah to do vidui, we could extrapolate that we must do tshuva. Effectively, then tshuva becomes a mitzvah. It doesn't make sense to do vidui without tshuva. Let's give another example, the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. So the Gemara understands that the psukim of kavod and yira very narrowly. They basically, kavod relates to the physical needs of one's parents. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, what is kavod? Machil, mashke, malbesh, mechaseh. Machnes umotzi, so taking care of your parents' physical needs. Many Rishonim, though, assume that there's a mitzvah to obey your parents more generally. In other words, it's not just to feed them. This comes out from, let's say, Rashi's Havana the Sugyan Yivamos on Heimud Beis going on to Vavamud Aleph, that a child must basically follow the requests of the parents, right? The Gemara, Rashi says, like, the Gemara there says, Yachol amalo aviv hitame, amalo al yachzir, yachol yishmalo, should you listen to your parent to do something that's against the Torah? So we have a pasuk, Talmud Lomar, ishimo vaviv tirao, v'shav sosai tishmaru, kulcham chayavim lechvodi. So, lule that, I would listen. So what does that mean? Amalo aviv lekohen, hitame bevesa kvaros, omedes bechutz v'amar lo al tachzir. So what do you see? That the scope of kibud avim would have otherwise included that. Other Rishonim understand that Gemara differently, but what emerges, I don't want to get too much into the details, but for many Rishonim in that sugya is that even though the Torah narrowly formulated the mitzvah in terms of things like machlet, machilu, mashkeu, malbisho, manilo, but nevertheless, from that emerges a very broad concept of general obedience, though within certain parameters. We'll give a couple more examples. The Torah, Tzar Balei Chaim D'Oraisa, right? Where is that from? How do we know that? So the answer is because the Torah commanded us to help someone load and unload a burdened animal. Now, how do I know that? It teaches me Tzar Balei Chaim, generally speaking, right? The Torah just said, if I see a donkey that has a heavy load on it, I should unload it. So the answer is that Svara, basically, we understand that the goal, what's the reason why I have to unload, help unload this animal that's struggling under the weight? Because it's in pain. From here, I derive a general principle of Tzar Balei Chaim with numerous applications that go much further. Baal Tashchis, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, and as other, well as other Rishonim, that there's a general prohibition against wastefulness or needless wastefulness. How do we know that? What did the Torah say? The Torah simply said, don't cut down fruit trees when doing battles. So we have so many examples of situations where the Torah taught us something in a very narrow formulation, and basically using svara, whereby we try to understand the reason for the mitzvah, we expand that mitzvah to many, many more places. Doesn't make sense that we only have to worry about a donkey with a heavy burden. It should apply to other animals, and it should apply to other situations of pain. Doesn't make sense we should only be concerned about wastefulness with respect to a fruit tree in warfare, so we expand it. It doesn't make sense that the Torah would have told us to do vidui, but not do tshuva. Vidui without tshuva is pretty meaningless. Doesn't make sense that we'd only be concerned about dressing our parents and that the mitzvah would be so narrow. Doesn't make sense that we should just be obligated to teach our children Torah. So from here and so many other places, we expand the mitzvah. The way that the Sefer HaChinuch sometimes puts it is, Umishoresh HaMitzvah Atadon. So one example is the Sefer HaChinuch by the Isser, or the mitzvah to appoint a king who's Jewish. Mikhev HaChach HaTasim Alach HaMelech. His lashon is, Mishoresh HaMitzvah Atadon. How do I know that if I have someone who's Jewish, but he is Rasha, that you can't be maimed him as a melech? From the fact that the Torah says that the king has to be Jewish. If you understand the Shorash HaMitzvah, then you could expand the mitzvah. Rev Tursky has an article on this a number of years ago and published in Tradition. So he gives, his article particularly focuses on the Sefer HaChinuch, places where you see the Sefer HaChinuch doing it. He calls this the expansivity principle. Places where we use the shoresh of the mitzvah to expand the mitzvah, to determine the scope of the mitzvah. Those are actually examples of expanding a mitzvah through svara. Sometimes we might make a mitzvah more narrow due to svara. What's an example? The Torah, we paskin teshvu kein tadurim by sukkah. So you could go inside if it's raining or it's very cold or the like. How do we know that? What's the makor for that? So the Ritva in sukkah writes that there isn't a pasuk. Rather, if we understand the mitzvah, we'll figure this out. Umayde darshina, this is chavav amad aleph. B'chol duchta teshvu kein tadurim. Lav melishna de teshvu nafkala dadaraba midalok siv tadura viksiv teshvu mashma epcha. Elishanu lemeidim mikavanas a mitzvah. Sha'amru Torah b'sukos teisu shivas yomim, kimo sheyisem yoshim bevateichem. In other words, we try to understand the kavanas ha-mitzvah, and from the kavanas ha-mitzvah, we determine the scope. In this case, we're narrowing the mitzvah. You don't always have to sit in the sukkah. You can also, you could go inside if it's very unpleasant or uncomfortable. And other times, like we said, an example of Bal Tashchis or Tzar Bali Chaim, we expand based off of Kavanas HaMitzvah, Shorish HaMitzvah, and the like. Now, big question we have to ask here, which we'll get back to in just a couple of minutes, is how does this relate to time of Dekra? We Paskin Lo Darshin and time of Dekra. Isn't that what we seem to be doing here again and again and again? We're saying, what's the time of the mitzvah? X, Y, or Z. Oh, based off of that, we're going to expand the mitzvah. We're going to say that it includes lots of other things not mentioned in the Torah, or we'll narrowly define the mitzvah. So that's a very important question. We'll get back to that in a moment. But I first want to just point out that this general idea, this point that we're stressing, that Svara plays such an important role in determining halacha, ensures that the true interpretation of the Torah is always within reach. The Gemara says in Tmura, Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, very famous Gemara, that Bimei Evlo Shel Moshe, 3,000 halachos were forgotten. And what happened? So they were very sad, because Lo Vashamayim Hi, and a Navi Rishai L'Chadish Davar, they couldn't turn to a Kadosh Baruch Hu for revelational guidance as to what to do. So what ended up happening? The answer is that Asniel ben Kenaz was machzir these halachos bepilpulo. In other words, what? What did he do? How did he reconstruct these halachos? The answer is svara. He went ahead and from the things that we know, using svara, he was able to reconstruct the halachos that were forgotten. So in a sense, then, we're able to retrieve even that which is forgotten, but even more importantly, address that which might never have been considered. Earlier in this man, we quoted the Yerushalmi that says that if the Torah was given chatucha, lo haisel regel amida, if it was given in clear-cut decisions, we wouldn't have a leg upon which to stand. What exactly does that mean? If you remember, the Yerushalmi depicted how Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you telling me the Torah in a way that is so frequently unclear? Just give me straight, clear-cut decisions. It should be like the Rambam. And the answer is that would not allow for the eternity of the Torah, the way some of the Mefarshim and the Yerushalmi explain, is that the ability to turn to the Torah to address every question that we might ever have stems from the fact that we can use things like Svara to figure out what the Torah would say about every single case that might ever arise. Sometimes it's clear cut, sometimes it's not, but we could always go back. We could always go back to the Torah. Now, you might ask, so why don't I see the term svara used more frequently, right? In other words, what I'm saying, like, svara is everywhere. You know, let's go back to the example we talked about, the Tzar Bali Chaim, right? So the Rashi explains that how do we know Tzar Bali Chaim? Because of the fact that the Torah says to help unload the animal, it must be because of Tzar Bali Chaim. So the point I think that you see from there is that it doesn't use the word svara, generally speaking, but clearly that's what's happening. We don't even realize. Its very indispensability accounts for the fact that it doesn't even state that's what's going on, because that's the latent assumption behind all of Torah. The Maratzchias writes in his Mevola Talmud, Chapter 15, all about this point, that really everything is based off of logical arguments that emerge from the text and the tradition that we have been given. In fact, let's say it like this. So far we've been talking a lot about Svara. And a very important question that we have to consider is the distinction between that which emerges from within the Torah, what sometimes legal philosophers call immanent logic or immanent Torah logic, and that which is external to the Torah. In other words, very basically, I could divide, there's two types of svaros. One type of svara comes from without and could potentially be exposed or placed upon the Torah. I have this idea. Where did I come up with this idea? I came up with it on my own. And now the question is, can I impose that svara on the Torah? That's one sort of situation. The other type, which is the type that we've been talking about this morning, is immanent. It's coming from within the Torah. For example, we're saying, look, the Torah over here told us not to, to help unload the animals. It only makes sense if that, or I shouldn't say only makes sense, but that presumably reflects a general concern for the well-being, the pain of animals. And therefore, I can extrapolate from there a general concern for pain for animals. So that type of logic is very different. So the first question we always have to ask when we're dealing with svara is, what is the basis of my svara? Is the basis of my svara from within or from without? Let's give an interesting example. At the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go provoke war with Sichon Leches Gorbo Mochama. And interestingly, Moshe seems to ignore what Hashem says. It says that I sent Perbeis Pasuk Chaf Vav. Makar is in your sheets, right? He sent Divrei Shalom. So this is very strange. You read the Psukim and it's astounding, actually, right? Seems like Moshe is flouting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's explicit directions. Hashem says, go provoke war. Moshe all of a sudden sends a peace delegation. What's going on? How could he do it? So Rashi, quoting Chazal, says that Moshe is using logic, not external logic. It's not like Moshe just said, oh, I think peace makes more sense than war. But rather, he was looking to the Torah's logic itself. Afal pisha lo tzivani amakom likro l'sichon l'shalom lamadati mimidbar Sinai. Minatorah shekad maliolam. That's what's alluded to in Midbar Kademos. Kesheva kadosh baruch hu litna l'Yisrael chazar osali al Esa v'Yishmael v'gol l'fanav shol yikabluha. V'afal pichin pasach lam b'shalom. Af ani kidamti es sichon b'divrei shalom. Davar acher mimidbar Kademos mimcha lamadati shekadamta l'olamcha. Yachal Yisa l'shloch barak echad v'lisrof es ha-mitriyim. Ella shalachtani al paro. So Rashi here gives two interpretations. Both of them are basically describing how Moshe Rabbeinu figured this out from the Torah, from God's behavior. Let's say in the second explanation, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu send Moshe so many times to Paro? Let my people go. Why didn't he just blast them? So from here, Moshe derived that the right thing to do would be to offer shalom to Sichon first. He was looking, and that's the idea of Midbar Kademos, he was looking to the Torah for guidance. Now, so what are we saying? We're saying that when we deal with Svara very frequently, perhaps not always, but very frequently we're talking about immanent Torah principles. We're looking to the Torah itself to find the basis of this idea. Does it account for all svara? I don't think so. we'll get back to places where it doesn't account for it. Like last time we talked about Hamotzi Mechaver Levaraya, about which the Pasuk says, the Gemara says, Lamali Kras Farahu. What's the Svara? Manda Kaiv Bekeval Azad Be'asya. So is that imminent? I'm not sure. I think that's pretty universal. I don't think it's coming from the Torah per se. We don't quote a Svara that emerges from a Pasuk or the like. But nevertheless, so we're not saying that that's the only type of Svara, but I think that it's certainly much more common and for obvious reasons, more powerful. I once thought that this explained what at first seemed to me to be a very interesting stira in the words of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish writes about in Emunah Bitachon how morality is the same thing as halacha. It's halacha that defines that which is moral, that which is ethical. And he seems to be saying that, you know, that's it. There's no such thing as morality outside of halacha, much like we considered last week. He gives a very interesting example about how, you know, there was a town and there was an old Rebbe, you know, been there for years and taking care of everybody. And then this new guy shows up and he wants to displace the old Rebbe. Should we allow him? And the new guy is better. And the halacha is, yeah. So even though maybe a person's a natural sense of morality would be to support the old Rebbe, but, and someone who follows that, maybe that intuitive moral feeling would be going against halacha. We have to look to halacha to define that which is moral. But there are so many times as well where the Chazon Ish seems to use svara to determine what's right and what's wrong, well beyond that which the Torah says explicitly. If we just give one example, but there are many. We talked before about the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. The mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, because the Torah itself is very narrow in its formulation. And the Chazon Ish argues that the mitzvah, though, includes much more. And I was, even though the Torah only said machilo mashkeu malbisho, his lashon is demikol makom hu chayev deoraisa, to listen generally to the request of the parents. Shaharei ratzon haTorah bekibud av umorao, ela sheikar asei hu bekibud shel machilo. So very umashkeu. So very interesting idea. What's going on here? Do we just follow what the halacha is, or do we follow Ratzon HaTorah? So the answer is, maybe this is obvious, but the answer is that when the Chazon Ish says we look at Ratzon HaTorah to determine the scope of the mitzvah, it's coming from the Torah. That's Ratzon HaTorah from the Torah. It's not something external imposed upon the Torah. So when we're talking about a svara that comes from within, so then that's something that's very, very powerful. And it's important not just to look at the technical formulation in the Torah, but to figure out what the Ratzon HaTorah is. And in many places, the Chazon Ish uses this concept of Ratzon HaTorah to determine what to do or not. We need to figure out what is Ratzon HaTorah. Ratzon HaTorah is not something that you could always just look to the text.
What about Moridim Bein Malim Chazon Ish?
Well, that's a different point. That's just saying that, I mean, maybe it's a similar point, but there he's saying, look, we have to understand what is the basis for that halacha. And if you understand the basis for that halacha, you'll understand why it's not relevant anymore. Right? In other words, I guess what you're pointing out is that how complex this could be, because a person could have gone ahead and looked at that halacha and said, "Ah, we see from here that the approach of the Torah is to be very harsh and violent towards all those who don't follow it, and reject it. And the answer is that, but if you understand that halacha more correctly, and again, you have to oftentimes have mastery of the whole Torah to be able to do this, you will understand that that's not what it means, or that's not the only thing that it means, and you'll understand that that halacha is something that doesn't have a place in the world in which we live. So you have to be, A, understand the world in which you live, B, understand the what's behind many of the halachos, and in doing so, you'll be able to determine that which is applicable. So that's exactly what the Chazon Ish is doing. We have to figure out what Ratzon HaTorah is. Sometimes it's about a mitzvah. In the example that you cited, it's about a particular halacha to figure out Ratzon HaTorah and then apply it. That's very different than the idea that the Chazon Ish is warning against, which is to impose your own moral values upon the Torah. So the Chazon Ish is not objecting to using your intellect to determine that which is moral. What he's doing is insisting that your intellect be grounded in the Torah's internal morality, as opposed to something that's external that's imposed upon it. You know, this relates very much to the example we talked about in the previous year about how you figure out Kedoshim to you, what's included in that, and that Ramban, who on the one hand explains that the idea of Kedoshim to you is necessary because otherwise a person could be Naval Rishus HaTorah. At the same time, the examples that the Ramban uses are all situations that emerge from within the concept of the Torah. So that's the first point. Again, that's not to say that there's also that the only type of svara that's valid is one that emerges from Torah principles. But certainly those that do emerge from Torah principles are going to be much more potent. I thought, Agav, that this explains a very fascinating Mordechai. The Mordechai, it's in Bava Kamma. The Mordechai says that, ironically, when it comes to the most inexplicable halachos, then Svara plays the greatest role. Right, there are certain types of halachos that, well, some mitzvos we call chukim, mitzvos that are unintuitive. Some halachos we call chidushim, which are basically concepts that seem to violate the typical rules. Right, so very interesting. So what? So the here I'll just read it to you. I don't think I put the actual text of the Mordechai on the sheets, but this is what he says. It's in Hagoz Aleitzim, and he like says like this: Amar Rabba, Mipneima Amra Torah, Moda Mikta Satayna Yishava. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, "Why? What's the reason for Moda Mikta?" And it gives a svara, and it's a svara that actually chaps in Nafkamina. Tema, v'halo, Rabbanan de Rabbi Shimon, lo darshi taima dekra. So why are we able to go ahead and say, mipneima amra Torah mode mitzvah satayni shava? Right? What's the reason for the mitzvah? We give an answer, and then we apply that answer. So this is very strange, asks the Mordechai. We paskin, lo darshi nan taima dekra. What's taima dekra? Taima dekra is when you go ahead, you ask the reason for a mitzvah, you suggest an answer, and then you allow that answer to determine the scope and practice of the particular law in question. Why did the Torah say that you may not collect collateral from a widow? We give a reason. We say, so in Cain it won't apply. We'll distinguish between Ani and Ashira, and we reject that idea. We don't paskin that way, but pashtus. So now the question is, isn't that exactly what we're doing? How could the Gemara ask? Says the Mordechai, v'yesh lomar, hacha d'davar tamuahu, d'davar temahu, afilu rabbanan darshi. In the case of something that's a d'var tema, everybody agrees we're dashing on time to kra. How do we see that? Mode of a mixas, he gives other examples. Bereshota mipnei ma hamina Torah eid echad be'eda sota. Again, you have this perplexing idea. It's a davar tema. It goes against normal rules. Shouldn't, doesn't make, according to the normal principles of eidus, you shouldn't, there's no, ain't davar shebe'er rules mishnayim, so we shouldn't be maimin eid echad be'sota. V'chein b'resh eila nisrachin mipnei ma namar yad be'barzel. V'chanami, and he gives an example, right? Motiv b'miktsas is a davar tema. Why? Doesn't make any sense that a kofer b'kol is potter from a shvua, but a mode b'miktsas is chayev a shvua. After all, he has a migu, etc. And it must be that, no, chazaka ein adonai is panav b'fnei b'cholo, etc., etc., etc. So the point is that, you know, how do we understand this? Just because this is devar tema? So I think the answer is that, almost ironically, this points to the tremendous kolach hasara, right? When it comes to a law that seems to violate svara, then adarabba, svara plays an even bigger role in determining the application of the law, because otherwise it would be a mystery. Otherwise it would contradict other Torah principles. So even if normally we're limited in our ability to use svara to determine the scope of a mitzvah, after all, we paskin lo darshin on time of dekra, but in a case where the result would be something that's inexplicable, a davar tema, then adarabba, we have no choice. Everybody agrees, darshin on time of dekra, everybody agrees svara must be used to determine the parameters of the mitzvah such that we're not left with a davar shel tema. So bekitzer, you know, what have we said so far? We've said that there's general Torah principles. These are internal. They emerge from the Torah generally, but they might be external to the particular law in question, and therefore, and those could be applied. And then we have perhaps an even stronger svara where the logic emerges from within that particular law. Now, this gets back to, well, let me just explain that a little better. Let's take the example we said of Sichon and Moshe Rabbeinu's svara that he should be makdim shalom, right? That didn't emerge from this particular mitzvah. That emerged from a general principle. Sometimes it's even from the particular mitzvah. Now, either way, what we're doing over here is we are using svara of different sorts to figure out the applicability of the halacha. So maybe it shouldn't make a difference. You know, does it make a difference if it's an external principle, a general Torah principle, or a specific Torah principle? I say a specific Torah principle, I mean a emerging from the particular halacha that we're learning. So I think it does make a big difference in terms of the strength of svara. And I think that this, by the way, I think once heard a shir from Rabbi Rosenzweig in which he was explaining, you know, what's the difference between lamdus and time of dekra? Right. When it comes to time of dekra, we have low darshin and time of dekra. But lamdus, all the time, we're going ahead and we're using lamdus to actually determine the geder of the mitzvah. Right. So what's the difference? So the answer is that because the lamdus emerges from within that particular halacha, whereas time of dekra is almost like looking at the mitzvah from an outsider's perspective and trying to understand it. And that's very different. So I think what we're saying is...
I mean, could you say that one more time?
Lamdus is trying to figure out the geder hadavar, right? We're looking at the mitzvah. We're looking at the halachos that we have. We're trying to figure out what's the internal logic of the mitzvah. And then once we've determined that internal logic of the mitzvah, we are applying that to new cases where we don't necessarily know the halacha. In other words, we take that which has been given, right? What we know, what the psukim tell us, what halachos we learn from drashos or what chazal teach us. And then we try to figure out what's the internal logic of that particular mitzvah. And then once we've determined that, so then we use that understanding to figure out what the halacha would be in cases that we haven't been told what the halacha is. That's lamdas. That's much more potent because it's coming from within. Taima dekra is very different. Taima dekra is asking, what's the reason for this mitzvah, not from within, but from without, right? It's the difference between, and again, we'll get to this in a moment. I'll try to bring you some rias for this. But it's, the word that Rav Lichtenstein used to use was the difference between a juridical why and a philosophical why. What does that mean? A juridical why, they're both whys. You know, it's, Briskers say, we don't ask why, we ask what, right? But you could really rephrase every what question is a why, and every why question, not every, but oftentimes is a what. So that's what are they saying? The answer is that they're not interested. Brisker has no interest in the philosophical why, which is looking at the mitzvah from the outside and saying, why did Hashem command this? And that's not to say there's no role. We saw examples of that before, but that's going to be much more limited. And that's why we paskin lo darshin in time of the crop. Whereas when you go ahead and you look, you know, what we do all the time, whenever we learn, we're working on lambdas, we're saying, you know, call it what or call it why, but it's not a philosophical why, it's a juridical why. It's asking what the gadir is, trying to figure that out based off of that which we know. And those are far more potent in terms of how we figure out the halachos. Sometimes it's going to be a machlokas. Sometimes it's unclear. It's not, I don't know. Machlokas Rishonim about tochacha. Does tochacha apply if the guy is going to listen? Is for sure not going to listen, or is likely not to listen, or the like. So some Rishonim say, well, if the purpose of the mitzvah is to get him to get better, so obviously it wouldn't apply here. And others say that's darshin on time of dekra. That's not a internal why, that's an external why. And therefore we can't do that. The Torah says to do it, we have to do it regardless. So we're going to have some cases where that's where it's not clear how to apply that principle. But certainly that distinction is very important in terms of understanding what the difference between Taina Dekra and Lamdas is. Now, another distinction I think that has to be made in terms of when we could apply Svar and when we shouldn't is to appreciate that not all Svaros are equal. We said before that certain Svaros are not imminent. They don't come from the Torah itself. They're in a sense imposed upon the Torah, but those are clear-cut, incontrovertible Svaros. Man dekayv bekev azol debayasya. Pesh asar pesha hitir. The idea that Ritzicha should be a Harig Bal Yavor, because Miyamet Dama Didach Sumut Tve, Dama Dama Dahu Gavra Sumut Tve. These cases are all very straightforward. On the other hand, we have other types of Svaros that are less clear. And Tosfos says a number of places that you could have a certain svara that only makes sense if we could find support for it in the Torah. And sometimes Tosfos says, because if you don't, then it has to be a svara pshuta. Tosfos and Shavuos is machalik that way. Some Rishonim point this out some Achronim from the beginning of Ketz Mevarchim. Maybe the Rishonim also, the Ritva sounds this way. The Gemara asks at the beginning of Ketz Mevarchim, what's the makor for bracha? Bracha Rishona. And the Gemara tries to bring Psukim, more or less fails, shows that the derivations are not compelling. So the Gemara concludes, it's a svara. What's the svara? Asa l'hamizman olam azeh b'lo bracha. So the Pnei Yeshua asks, I don't understand, and bracha Rishona is deraisa, because we've just seen that a bracha, a svara is deraisa. As far as the status of the deraisa. So he actually says, taka it is. But the Rishonim don't learn that way. Almost all the Rishonim and the Sugya earlier by Balkari, where it says that the Balkari doesn't make a bracha because it's not a deraisa except for benching and kriyashma, which are deraisa. So the Gemara is pretty clear that bracha Rishonim is a deraisa. So if so, but why not? The Pnei Yeshua is making a very good point, right? It's a svara, as far as deraisa. So one answer that some Achronim say, and again, I think the Ritva might allude to it in his Hilchos Brachos, is that this is a svara, but it's not a svara that's so compelling that it would have the status of a din d'oraisa. Not every svara is equal. So here, this is a svara that is not sufficiently strong, not sufficiently compelling to independently create a mitzvah de'oraisa. It reflects a sensitivity that we might have, but it doesn't have a din de'oraisa. So not all svaros are equal. We're running out of time. I said we would talk about Darshin and time of the Kra, so let's talk about that a little quickly. And then we'll try to talk about the sort of the more modern examples and issues of morality and the like. So let's talk about Darshin and time of the Kra first. So as we mentioned before, there's a machlokas about between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about Darshin and time of the Kra. Are you allowed to take the garment of a widow if she's wealthy? According to Rabbi Shimon, you may, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you may not. And the Gemara says their debate is about Darshin and time of the Kra. We paskin Rabbi Yehuda, so we're low Darshin and time of the Kra. Now, the first thing to emphasize, actually, is that that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to figure out Tamei HaMitzvos. The Rambam, very famously at the end of Hilchos Me'ila, writes that to the extent that you're able to understand Tamei HaMitzvos, you should. And that's why many Rishonim, the Rambam, the Chinuch, others, devote considerable energy to Tamei HaMitzvos. But the point that they're saying is that Tamei HaMitzvos, generally speaking, again, we talked earlier about maybe exceptions to that, but generally speaking, don't determine the scope of a mitzvah. Okay, so it's nice to find out Tamei HaMitzvos. I'll just give an example to make that clear, right? The Gemara very famously says, Mepnei ma amra nida sura l'shiva. The mayor says, why is it that anida is asur l'baila? Shelote ragilba v'katzpa. Good. So we all understand the beautiful idea. The idea of the isur nida instills marital rejuvenation and passion. Wonderful. Nobody would say that, well, so in the case where that svar doesn't apply, somebody's husband was out of town for 6 months. He was in jail, I don't know, and now he comes back and he's going to be home with his wife for a week, and then he's got to go back. He's got to leave. He's got to go back to jail. So certainly this couple is would have a lot of passion if they were able to be together. But if she's Nida, she's Asura. It doesn't matter, right? In other words, we're not going to allow the tam of the mitzvah, which again, it's coming from Chazal. It's not even, you know, some modern one. It's coming from Rameir, but we're not going to say that the tam of the mitzvah is relevant l'maisa. So maybe even Rabbi Shimon would agree to that. If you look, the Achronim on the page of the Shulchan Aruch discussed that question. But regardless, so that's Pashat. That's Pashat. So how do we know what's time of Dikra, which we don't allow for, and these types of things that we've been talking all about today, where we do this? So there's a lot of factors. Number one is, like we were saying, the distinction between the juridical why versus the philosophical why. Another factor that the Tosfos HaRosh says in Bava Metzia is it's going to be dependent upon the text of the Torah. To go ahead, Tosfos HaRosh is a very fascinating Tosfos HaRosh. He has the kasha, you have it on the Makor sheets. He says that it's clear from the Gemara. The Gemara is a shaila in Bava Metzia. You know, what's the halacha? You're not allowed to normally muzzle your animal while the animal is threshing. Well, what about if it's a matrezes v'haleches, the animal has a diarrhea or something, it's in a lot of discomfort, and if you allow it to eat, it's going to get sick, and if you muzzle it, so then it won't be so sick because it's not going to be able to eat, so you let it muzzle it. So the Gemara discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara concludes basically that it's okay. So the Tosfos HaRosh says, I don't understand what happened to Lo Doshin in time of Dikra. And his answer is that in this case, it wouldn't disagree with the Pashtei Dikra. And when is it that Lo Doshin in time of Dikra? It's when it does. So that's what he says, right? That's what he says. So I don't understand. What do you mean? The pasuk doesn't say one thing or the other. How is it different than Beged Almana, right? But the answer is, like we were saying, that we have to go ahead. If you just want to take a look, that Makor is, did I just close the Makor sheets? A second. Okay. It's where it says, Bav Metzia Tzadi Amid Aleph. So take a look over there at the Tosfos HaRosh. Afilu leman delo darish time of dekra de amar almana bein ani bein ashira v'chulei haynu mishum de pashtei dekra mashma bein ani bein ashira. Aval hacha pshita derachmana izhar ela lo izhar ela letovasa shel behema imishum de malila. In other words, the suffix of the Gemara, either way, this is going to be true. So it's a very fascinating question. If we have time, we could talk about it a little more, because you could ask about this. What do you mean? Michtesi. Either way, the Torah doesn't say anything. Why is one case more than the other? But the answer he's saying is that when we try to figure out when we should apply the principle of time of Dikra, we have to consider the text, and sometimes using the time of Dikra to determine the scope is against the Pashtei Dikra, like in the case of limiting it to a almana aniya and not an ashira, and sometimes, like in the case of the behema that's matrezes ve'ocheles, so then doing so would not contradict Pashtei Dikra, and therefore everybody would agree that we are Doresh Taima Dikra. Okay, so I want to talk about three Mekoros found three discussions in modern thinkers, three 20th century thinkers. We're going to talk about Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz, and we'll talk about Rav Kook, Rav Soloveitchik, and how they use Svara to determine Halacha. So we'll first talk about Rabbi Berkowitz. There's an interesting book. It's called Not in Heaven, the nature and function of halacha. And he takes a lot of the types of arguments that many of which we've considered about how prominent Svara is. And he then goes ahead and he says that, well, we have to use these arguments to determine the halacha in particular cases, right? He quotes Rabbi Yehuda Levi, who says, God forbid that there should be anything in the Torah that contradicts reason. And based off of this, he writes, the rabbis in the Talmud were guided by the insight. God forbid that there should be anything in the application of the Torah to the actual life situation that is contrary to the principles of ethics. What are those principles? They're the principles like, and you shall do that which is right and good in the eyes of the eternal. You shall walk in the way of good man and keep the path of righteousness, etc., etc. And then he uses these principles, like Darchei Noam, that's one of the most common ones, to go ahead and reinterpret the Torah. He says, look, the Torah has these overarching values of things like human dignity and protecting the innocent and so on and so forth. And basically, that allows us to do almost anything we want, despite what the text of the Torah might have said and despite what the Gemara says and the like. He invokes as an example Ben Soru Mora. We'll come back to that example in a moment, and the like. So I think we understand that that's wrong. But the question is, why is it wrong? After all, you know, we've spent two shiurim discussing the tremendous koach of Svara. And the Gemara itself uses the principle of Darchei Noam in more or less two places. Does that tell us what he's claiming, that this is the halachic conscious that's capable of basically telling us to change the halacha? So let's try to understand how the Gemara uses the principle of Darchei Noam, and then we could try to figure out what we could do based off of that principle. So one context is in Sukkah, on Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis. The Gemara asks, maybe this hirduf plant should be valid. And the Gemara says, no, it's thorny. You would prick your finger, and therefore this is not valid for Arba Minim. So what does this tell us? Does that mean that when we encounter a particular halacha that we see as not reflecting Darchei Noam, and therefore we could basically say it doesn't apply anymore? So first of all, I think that the Mefarshim understand that this is anyway based off of a tradition. That's what the Rambam writes in the Hakdama to Perush HaMishnah, that the Arba Minim is an example of a Perush Mekubal. We have a tradition going back to Sinai, what they are. And anyway, what the Gemara is doing over here is Begeder and Asmachta. In other words, it's not actually saying it would be invalid because of Darchei Noam. We know what the Arba Minim is based off of Mesorah. Darchei Noam is not really determining what's kosher or not. But even beyond that, even if we didn't say that's true. So here we have two equally valid ways of interpreting the pasuk. And Darchei Noam says, understand it this way and not the other way. It's not, I don't believe, a halachic conscience that basically says anytime we see something as not Darchei Noam, we can reinterpret it. And a similar thing for the other place in Shas where we seem to use Darchei Noam in this way. This is in Yevamos, Pei Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara wants to know over there, what is the halacha? Let's say you have a woman whose husband dies And so she's subject to Yibam, right? If she has no children. Okay. Now, what about if she doesn't have any, her husband didn't have any brothers? So then she can remarry. She doesn't need to do chalitza. What about if a child is born after the husband's death? Would we now require Yibam or chalitza? And the Gemara says no, because that would violate Darchei Noam, right? What would that mean? She's already remarried because she was Mutaris Lashuk at the time of her husband's death. And now we're going to go ahead and say she has to do chalitza? That would not be Darchei Noam. That's what the Gemara says. So how are we supposed to understand it? Should we read this Gemara saying, oh, well, since the Torah's halacha would lead to this unpleasant or immoral situation, so therefore, based off of Darchei Noam, we say not that way. So if you learn the sugya, you'll see that's not the way the Mefarshim, the Rishonim, or the Achronim understand this Gemara. The Gemara over there is saying something else. Throughout Maseches Yevamos, we find that the obligation of Yibam and Chalitza is determined by the moment of the husband's death. And what the Gemara is asking is, how do we know that that's the case? Maybe Yibam and Chalitza should be some type of open-ended thing whereby if a brother was born later, she would have to do chalitza. And the Gemara says, no, that can't be the gather of the mitzvah because that would violate Darchei Noam. So therefore, it must be, as the Gemara assumes throughout the Masechta, that the zeka is determined by the moment of death. So what I'm saying here is that how are we using Darchei Noam? We have two ways to understand the text of the Torah, the din of the Torah, the nature of Zekas Yibam. We could go one way or the other way. Well, since one understanding is one more compelling than the other, no. But one of them would lead to a situation which would be a lack of Darchei Noam. So it must be that the other one is correct. In that sense, I think that the Gemara in Yevamos is very similar to the Gemara in Sukkah. Or again, there might be different because it's there. If you learn like the Rambam, it's not, it's anyway on the level of a smachta. But even if you didn't learn that way, so the pshat would be of two ways to understand the psukim, two equal ways. And Chazal used Darchei Noam to determine one or the other. And that's why when you look at the poskim, first of all, you generally never find, it's not never, a situation where, you know, something looks like it should be usher, and we say, oh, no, Darchei Noam, it's different. When you do occasionally do see Darchei Noam mentioned, it's very limited, and oftentimes perhaps in the context of other factors. But what you don't find is this idea that when you have some situation where what the Torah said is clear or what Chazal said are clear, and then we just say, well, no, it can't be that way because of Darchei Noam. I don't think there's any basis for that. So that's the first point. The second parenthetical point is I'll bring up because it's oftentimes mentioned, is the example of a ben soer u'moreh as an example of, oh, look how far morality goes in terms of determining the pasuk. So what do they say? The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, v'chi mipnei she'achol zeh tartimas basar, and he drank a chatzi lug yayin, he should be killed, right? So one answer in the Gemara is, drosh v'kabel schar. In other words, basically, it's inconceivable that he would be stoned. So this mitzvah isn't relevant. So the truth is that there's two ways to understand this. Why is it inconceivable that he could be stoned? So it could be a practical consideration, right? No parent would cooperate. And it could be a moral consideration. Reb Shimon says it's inconceivable that the Torah would execute someone for such a crime. So which one is correct? So sort of interesting, actually, because this is Rabbi Shimon's view. Remember, we talked about Rabbi Shimon's view about Darshin HaTaima D'Kra and the Tosfos HaRashi's theory that about, you know, when we could use that even against the simple reading of the text. So maybe that's exactly what he's saying. Even though it's against the simple reading of the text, we're going to go ahead and reread it. So anyway, my brother-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchak Grossman, pointed out that there are a number of modern thinkers that read the Gemara that way, that they understand that's what we're doing. We're basically saying that the mitzvah is lo lamaisa because of moral considerations. He pointed out that this is something that Rabbi Amital, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, Rabbi Berkowitz, Professor Moshe Halbertal all do. They all quote that Gemara to do this. And there are really a couple of haros to make on this reading of the Gemara, which I think is interesting. First of all, even if that's the correct understanding of Rabbi Shimon is saying that Ben Sora Umor is not Lamaisa because of a moral consideration, we don't pass him like Rabbi Shimon. We don't pass him like him, generally speaking, in terms of his position of low darshin on time of the Kra. We pass him low darshin on time of the Kra. And conceivably, this is a reflection of that. And we don't pass him like Rabbi Shimon Lagabe Ben Sora Umor. If you look at the Rambam and Hilchos Mamrim, Parak Zion, we assume the Rambam paskins the halachos of Ben Sora Umor, just like he paskins in the other halacha. He doesn't assume drosh v'kav al schar, and that this is not relevant. So the first reason why I think this approach is incorrect is because it's lo ali b'tilchosa. The second is because if you look at all the classical mafarshim, none of them read it this way. None of them say the pshat is that this is a moral consideration. You can look at the Yad Ramah, you can look at the Marsha. They all don't learn it that way. It's not a moral consideration. And I think that's an interesting ha'ara. We have to be careful that we correctly look at Chazal and how they use moral considerations in terms of determining the halacha, both with respect to Darchei Noam and here with respect to Ben Sora Mora. And I think oftentimes that those sources, which are again so often cited to justify deviation from halachic norms, are being cited incorrectly. Finally, the third thing I want to talk about, which is really very interesting, I was hoping to spend more time on it, but we don't have time, is to discuss questions where halacha seems to go against a person's sense of morality. So the first thing is that it's obvious that if a person encountered a dilemma where they felt they were being asked to choose between their own sense of morality and also the halacha, so it's obvious that they would have to follow what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Akedas Yitzchak is certainly an example of that principle. Moreover, as we noted earlier, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the source for all morality. So it's obvious that you would have to listen to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. So even though, as we've been saying throughout this whole shiur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us to use our seichel, but that's in the absence of a divine command. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us otherwise, we have to surrender. And surrendering is, as Rav Tversky likes to point out, almost definitional to Avodas Hashem. If we're never willing to surrender, then that isn't Avodas Hashem. It's, we're just, you know, doing whatever we think we want or whatever we think makes sense. And at times we have to surrender not just to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to the Chachmei HaMasorah, who, if they say something that, you know, we don't really understand, we can't just say, oh, you know, that's not what they meant. If that's not an honest reading, we have to say, I don't understand, but that doesn't mean that that's wrong. So, you know, there are times when you're allowed to argue with earlier generations. There are times where you're allowed to even argue with people that you acknowledge are greater than you. And then there are times that you may not argue. We don't have time to sort of try to figure out those gedarim, but certainly that's the case. You know, that's something that modern man has a hard time with. I don't think it's just modern man. If you look, Chazal talk a lot about the struggles that come from chukim, that either Umos HaOlam make fun of us or the Yetzer Hara. In other words, chukim, which really are mitzvos that we don't understand, they're counterintuitive. So there's external battles, the outside world telling us this doesn't make sense, and internal battles, and we don't understand them. And nevertheless, we do that. The Rambam at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah so powerfully depicts that the Torah told us that there's Shmira Nasiya for Chukim. This tells us, A, that we have to observe them, and B, we have to believe in them. Ramban also writes that believing in mitzvos is necessary. That's how he understands in one of the interpretations, Ara Sheli Alchemist Deriyat Tarazah. So even though Svara plays this important role, we also have to submit. And that's a very important point. But there's a very interesting couple of letters. It's Pei Tes and Sadi. It's worth reading inside, where Rav Kook deals with certain cases where it almost seems like the halacha is against that which is moral, and the tension that arises because of that. He talks about over there the ethics of war and slavery and polygamy and the like. And one of the things he says over there, which is very interesting, is that basically, well, when such an issue comes up, the Sanhedrin will find a way to read the psukim such as to solve that question, maybe by saying why this particular mitzvah isn't relevant. Now, obviously, again, the Sanhedrin doesn't have the ability to change the Torah, you know, on their whim, but they'll find a way to understand the psukim in a way that don't contradict these ethical notions. Now, what does that mean nowadays? So Rav Kook here actually writes, that doesn't mean that we can do that now. We don't have a Sanhedrin, so we're limited in our ability to reread the Torah, as it were. And he also emphasizes that, you know, the fact that right now we're not able to do that is hashgacha. That's the way it's supposed to be now. But at a certain time, you know, you could be confident that that will be restored. I think that when you look at the writings of Rav Soloveitchik, not that there's necessarily a direct machlokas, but certainly I think a difference in attitude. He stresses much more the role of submission. In many, many places in his writings, she just wanted to take a look. And actually, I was reading recently his essay, Confrontation, and he writes about that extensively, about the necessity to be mevatel yourself. I'll quote, maybe I guess we're very late, so with this we'll end, a line from Rav Tursky about this point, which I think is very relevant. So this is a piece from Rav Tursky, which you can read in a Torah Web. Modern man, buoyed by the explosion of scientific knowledge and the previously unimaginable advances in scientific technology, wants to know, but does not want to believe. Man's understanding is the measure of everything. Mishpatim sit well with us. Chukim are grating. We are too often unwilling to surrender and acknowledge our limitations. In truth, we are limited not only vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also lahavdil with regard to our Chachmei HaMesorah. We know of their wisdom. There is much in the words of Chazal that we are privileged to understand and appreciate. But at times we encounter chukim in the words of Chazal. We do not understand the what or why of certain Ma'amari Chazal. At such times, we are called upon to surrender and believe. Our acceptance of all halachos and hashkafas haTorah must be unconditional. In our times, we also witness the profound and tragic truth of an insight provided by the Rav Zatzal. The Rav explained that without the absolute unconditional acceptance and submission to chukim, our commitment to mishpatim will also erode. In his day, the Rav cited the prohibition against murder. This is the ultimate mishpat. And yet, if our acceptance of lo tirtzach is rooted only in our intuitive moral sense and not in unconditional surrender to Ratzon Hashem, ultimately even lo tirtzach is rationalized away as our exigencies and predilections dictate. The Rav decried how euthanasia and abortion, acts of murder, are construed as acts of compassion. In our day, the nightmare of a society which accepts mishpatim but does not surrender to chukim has grown even darker. We are witness to shameless attempts to legitimize homosexuality, which the Torah brands an abomination within Orthodox Judaism. As evidenced by these examples, the reciprocity of faith and knowledge is more vital than was hitherto described. They simply cannot exist without each other. Authentic faith requires a foundation of knowledge, but knowledge also requires the support of faith and the act of intellectual surrender inherent within faith. Otherwise, knowledge is susceptible to being relativized and rationalized away. So again, he's not saying that we have to stop thinking, but what he is highlighting is that we have to be willing to submit. And though the Torah is really incredible, because on the one hand, as we've seen, it gives tremendous koach to svara, but at the same time, it demands of us that we also acknowledge our limitations and be willing to be mevatel ourselves. And it's important then that we make sure not to lose that balance, to understand, to appreciate when svara is appropriate tool to interpret the Torah, and when our approach has to be mevatel ourselves. And if we get that wrong, so then the consequences on both errors could be catastrophic. I want to thank you all. Sorry for going so long, whoever's left. And the Siyata Dishmaya will, even if this is the This is the last year. We'll continue to learn Torah together, and I'm sure I'll continue to see you guys around. So everyone, Yashar Koach, and have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos, Rabbi.
Good Shabbos.
Shabbos, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
Baruch Tia.